I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with former astronaut Mike Massimino. In his book, his latest book is called Moonshot, a NASA Astronaut's Guide to Achieving the Impossible. You learned a lot when you went into space, Mike, didn't you?
Yeah, I sure did, George. I came in into the program. I was a civilian, and I learned so much about teamwork and persistence and leadership in my years at NASA, because that's what we needed. We needed a way to work together and kind of guidelines, takeaways, things you could remember, rules of engagement that would help us be successful in our missions. And what I found was those rules, having that sort of culture, that attitude, is also very helpful in everyday life, whether you're working in a cubicle or at home or dealing with your family. A lot of those principles were very helpful.
Your work is very uplifting to a lot of people, and you could tell by the way you wrote these things with special guides about the 30-second rule, one in a million is not zero, and stuff like that. How much of this did you know before you went into space?
None of it. I mean, well, I learned it. I should say there's a difference between becoming an astronaut and then going to space. It was 6 years of training before I flew in space. So I would say I learned everything except for the first chapter is about my persistence to get the opportunity to become an astronaut, and that was that first chapter is one in a million is not zero. Even if there's a slight chance for success, you should give it your best, because as long as you try, there's a chance. But the next nine chapters are things that I learned as an astronaut. So a lot of it I learned before my first space flight, and was able to use those ideas, those rules, guidelines, lessons to help me on my first space flight, and then some were also learned after my first space flight. So all of it was, most of it, 90% of the book was learned after becoming an astronaut.
What advice would you give people, Mike, who have that feeling of, I can't do it, it just won't work for me?
Well, I think you have to hang in there, because I think that success is just trying. And even if it doesn't work out, as long as you try, I consider that to be a success. When I was, after my fourth application, and I had an interview, a second interview after I was able to get the medical disqualification I had overturned, I was able to apply again, and I got another interview, and I was waiting to hear, and back in October, the interview itself was in October of 1995, and we ended up getting the word, the decisions were made and told to all the candidates in April of 96. But I remember going on vacation with my family in March of 96, and I was waiting to hear what the result was going to be, and it probably was not going to be good. You know, the odds are against you in this, but But I felt like I would just keep trying. And what I had done in the meantime to help me be a better candidate for the astronaut program, I had gotten my PhD from MIT in engineering. I had learned to fly airplanes. I had my private pilot's license. I learned to scuba dive. I had that license. I was doing research in space. I had experiments that had flown in space. And I had a position as a faculty member at Georgia Tech. So life was pretty good. And I remember thinking, well, if I get rejected again, which is probably what's going to happen just because of the sheer odds that are against you, I still was in a good place. And I would keep trying. But if it didn't happen, I couldn't control that. But I ended up having these other things that were really interesting in my life as a result of the path that I was on. So I think that, you know, if it's something you're really passionate about, you owe it to yourself to give it a try. You never know. It may work out. And if it doesn't, I think you'll find yourself in a better position than when you started.
Michael, a year after you went into space on the space shuttle Columbia, it disintegrated. It was a horrible situation. I've got to ask you this. What went through your mind when you heard about that tragedy?
Yeah, it was a pretty bad day. I flew on Space Shuttle Columbia in March of 2002. The next time Columbia went to space, the beginning of the year of 2003, it launched in January, and on February 1st is when we lost the Columbia and the crew. Now, it was terrible. It's probably the worst day of my life. It was the worst day of my life, losing my seven friends and losing the spaceship, it was a horrible day. It really was, but we were able to come back from that. You know, the first thing we did was mourn our friends and go to the memorials and try to take care of the families, and then we started turning our attention. In addition to doing that, turning our attention to trying to get the space shuttle to fly again. We, you know, that the accident had taken enough. We didn't want it to take any more. We didn't want the whole space program to go away, and we wanted the shuttle to keep flying. And I'm really proud of the way we reacted to the accident. It was horrible, but there was no finger pointing. There was a pure investigation done that was a very honest evaluation of what had happened. There was plenty of blame to go around, but we stuck together and were able to get the program flying again, to finish the International Space Station construction with the space shuttle, and also to service the Hubble Space Telescope one more time before the shuttle program was retired in 2011.
Well, you folks are brave people, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I, you know, you never know how you're going to react to things when they happen. And I was working after college before I went to grad school when the Challenger accident happened. And that didn't deter what I wanted to do. I wanted to still try to become an astronaut and wanted to be a part of the program. And when that accident, but I didn't know anybody. I wasn't with NASA. I was very removed from the program at that point. But the second one, I knew everybody, and that was, I guess I said that was my spaceship on my first flight. So it was really personal, but it really didn't add any new information. It wasn't like I didn't know it was dangerous. We all knew it was dangerous and that these things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't add any new information. It was unfortunate that what happened, of course, and it was a terrible day. But it really didn't add any new information. It just showed us that, yeah, this is a dangerous business, and you got to be as vigilant as possible.
Yeah.
Never let that happen again.
And we moved on as a nation, and we kept moving
on. Yeah.
So your book just came out, and inside of it, it talks about the 30-second rule. What is that?
Yeah. Well, George, it's a way to deal with your mistakes, and
which we all make.
Everyone makes mistakes, and what I would do when before I was an astronaut, I typically, if I made a mistake and I was upset with myself, I would ruminate on it, you know, for hours or days or sometimes a whole week, depending on what had happened, and just feel bad about it and kind of be down in the dumps. Not really being engaged with life when that was going on. When you're in space, you don't have an hour or even a minute to spare down in the dumps, not helping, not doing your job. And so I would hear from my colleagues, from from our instructors, and from the veteran astronauts that you have to let your mistakes pass. You have to let your mistakes pass. I was like, yeah, easy to say that, but it wasn't easy for me to do. I would still ruminate a bit until I learned the 30-second rule. One of my crewmates, Megan MacArthur, told me about it, and she had learned it from C.J. Sturkow, who was a Marine Corps pilot in our office. And that is, when you make a mistake, and you're going to make mistakes, so it's not a question of eliminating mistakes, because that's not going to happen. As careful as you are and as prepared as you are, things are just going to happen. You're going to make a mistake. Sometimes it's your fault. Sometimes it's not. Doesn't matter. You're going to make a mistake, right? So the thing that you have to learn is how to deal with them. And so you're going to be upset. The 30-second rule says give yourself 30 seconds of remorse or 30 seconds of regret. And take that 30 seconds and feel bad and beat yourself up and call yourself names. Don't vocalize any of this because you'll scare people. Just keep it internal and you know, beat yourself up. Say, I can't believe I did that. I'm the worst astronaut in the world. Whatever happened. And then coming out of that 30 seconds, what I would do is, okay, I understand what happened. I'm going to learn from that mistake, and I'm never going to let that happen again. And now it's time to move on. And I found that internal rant of letting myself be mad at myself for what I did, but instead of letting it last for days, only let it last for 30 seconds, and mm-hmm. then it's time to put it in the past and move forward.
And keep going straight.
Keep going straight, and just keep going.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
Is he breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
When you're in space, does it do anything to you spiritually?
I think from what I've noticed, George, is that being if you're a spiritual person or not, I think it's it, it I never saw a change, you know, a perspective change. Mine didn't necessarily, but I think you interpret the world with those types of, with whether you're spiritual or not. That's the way you, I think it helps you interpret the world. So, you know, I would, I consider myself to be a spiritual person. So when I looked at the earth, I'll maybe interpret it more from a spiritual perspective or from, you know, having a God in my life, or, you know, you can look at it that way, or another person who is, maybe not a believer or not a spiritual person would look at it and interpret it differently. But I don't think it all of a sudden changes. I haven't seen it change the way anyone's thought. It didn't change where I thought about things. It just helped me perceive what I was looking at. And I think that most people, and at least the people that I've known as astronauts, had some a spiritual component to them, not necessarily religious. They may not believe in a certain religion, but I think they did sort of see things in a spiritual way, whether or not they believed in God or that was, you know, it maybe something else, a religious inclination or not. But I think most people do have some sort of spiritual component to them, and I don't think it necessarily changes. In my opinion, I didn't see any of that, but I definitely see it. That's how you can interpret differently based on your belief system.
Michael, I'm in awe with the universe just on this planet. I can only imagine what it's like to be in space looking around. My gosh.
Yeah, well, it's a different perspective.
It truly is. It truly is. Did you ever get a chance to meet the late astronaut Neil Armstrong, first man on the moon?
Yeah, I did. I met him. I first met him right after I became an astronaut, my first week at NASA, and had a chance to meet him then, and several times after that as well. And I got to know his sons, Rick and Mark, very nice guys. And he was every bit of a hero. Every time I met him, every conversation we had, or anything he might have told me, just made everything I learned about him from his friend, the people he worked with, from his colleagues back in the Apollo days, it just increased my admiration for him. He was a very very shy, very humble person. Never exploited the opportunity he had. Was very much a person that would give credit to others. The Apollo 11 patch is a very unique patch. The space patch that they wore and they designed. It's the only patch. It's the only space mission patch out of all the however many, probably around 200 or so in existence, including my two. Apollo 11 is the only one that doesn't have the names of the crew on it. It just has an eagle landing on the moon, and it says Apollo 11. And Neil Armstrong and his crew did that, so they wouldn't take the credit. They wanted the credit to be focused on others who made that happen. He's just an amazing guy. Very much about doing his job and getting it right and doing the right thing and not getting distracted. And just an amazing person to have accomplished what he accomplished and yet be as humble as he was is, I think, quite remarkable.
What's it like to shake the hands of the first person on the moon?
He's good. It was cool. It was great.
I bet.
It really was. He was my hero. This was one of the really exciting benefits of becoming an astronaut is that I all of a sudden I was kind of part of this club with these guys, and I got to know not just Neil, but Alan Bean. I write about him in my book. Became a mentor, a very dear friend of mine. Charlie Duke is a good friend of mine. He's still alive. He's one of the 12 that walked on the moon. He was he's one of the four that are left. Only four of those guys are left. But I just saw Charlie a couple weeks ago. And Harrison Schmitt, I've gotten to know him as well, the last person to walk on the moon. So it's kind of cool when you idolize these guys as a kid, and then you
meet them,
a chance to grow up and kind of follow in their footsteps and get to know them and find out that, you know, they're interested in getting to know you and what you're doing in space. And it's just been a pleasure, a real honor to get to know these guys. And you know, Gene Kranz and the other flight directors and other people involved in the program. They're all getting old now. I'm getting old too.
We're all doing that.
They're a lot older than me. So we're lucky that a few of them are still around, but you know, they are getting older. But it really was just a pleasure to get a chance to meet Neil Armstrong and, and some of these other guys that were from the Apollo program.
I shook the hands of number two on the moon, Buzz Aldrin.
It was
on the Larry King. He's still there. He's still hanging in there.
Buzz's still alive.
He's a toughie. Never tell him he didn't go to the moon. That's for sure.
No, I wouldn't. I know they went. I'm not going to debate that with those guys. That's for sure.
Isn't it crazy? Some people who just don't think we went to the moon.
Yeah, I think we have. We need to be worried about other things. It's an incredible accomplishment, and we need to honor it and not question it.
Absolutely.
Accomplishment.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.